We're holding on page Chof Ches in Psachim, middle of the page, middle of Ois Nun He, a paragraph beginning Shom Tanu Rabban. We just started talking yesterday about Tillim and about the different expressions of praise to Hashem that are in it, and the discussion of whether the word Halleluka in Tillim is one word or two. So now more on this topic. Tanu Rabbanan or Tanya or Meir Hoya Omer. Kol Shiros v'Tushbachos Amoris b'Sefer Tillim Kulam David Amoran. All the songs and all the praises of Hashem that it says in Sefer Tillim, all of them David said. Specifically, actually, Rashi mentions that, Rashi first of all says for all the different events that happened in his life, but also, Shenema, the pasuk says, Kolu Tfilis David ben Yishai, at the end of Kapitel Ayin Beis, you have the pasuk, the Tfilis of David ben Yishai are ended. But the problem with that is, what do you mean ended? That's only that's not even the middle of Sefer Tillim yet. It's only the end of Kapitel Ayin Beis. There's 70 odd Kapitel to go. Al Tikri Kolu Ela Kol Elu. So don't read kolu, but rather kol elu. All of these, meaning Rashi says particularly all the ones that we find that begin with the word tefillah. You have a couple that begin tefillah the David, but you have also tefillah the Oni and tefillah the Moshe. All of them actually David composed. Now, what about the one, for example, you have tefillah the Moshe, and you have, for example, the Kuflamites that it says that other magician composed. So all of them, though, the point is that David took them and rewrote them. So for example, Tefillah of Moshe and the rest of the Kapitel after that, Moshe originally composed them, but now David took them and rewrote parts of them and incorporated them into Sefer Tillim. So now, V'halal Zemi Omrei, so now the question is, the halal that we say on Pesach night and on Yom Tovim, who was the first one to say it? So yesterday we learned, the Gemara had said, that the Nevi'im Shebeinayim, that the Nevi'im among the Jewish people, established that we should say it every time we're saved from a tzar. But who was the first one who composed it? Rabbi Yossi Omer, Elazar bni Omer. So Rabbi Yossi says that my son Elazar says, Moshe v'Yisrael amruhu b'shasha omdu Yisrael alayam or b'shasha olu min hayam. Moshe and the Jewish people first said it by Kriyas Yamsuf. So in other words, you would have what? Elazar bni. This is Rabbi Yossi had a son, Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Elazar bni Omer. Elazar bni Omer, that Rabbi Yossi is saying, my son Elazar, this is Rabbi Elazar, but Rabbi Yossi, a Tana, says, middle page Chofas, says that Moshe and the Jewish people said it when they came out of the Yamsuf. So, Sha'omdu Yisrael al Yam would mean when they were standing there, maybe even before Kriyas Yamsuf, which the Gemara is going to mention soon, that particularly the pasuk Lo Lonu Hashem Lo Lonu, they said at that point. Sha'olu Min Hayam would mean when they came out of the Yamsuf, which would mean, in other words, that at that point they actually would say, so in other words, Marashel says it would mean that they actually said two things. They sang Hallel as well as they sang Oz Yoshe. Marashel actually wonders in that case. I mean, you have in Hallel based out in Baruch Hu'as Hashem v'Gomer, and based out in Baruch Hu'as Hashem, you have Yom based Aaron. Aaron hadn't specifically been chosen as the progenitor of the Kohenim. Yet at that point, the Avodah was still the Bechoris. So how are we saying that they're already saying it at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf? So Marashel says V'yesh L'Yashiv. We could reconcile it. And in fact, one of the answers is, like we said, some of the Kapitlach existed before David, and then David rewrote them. So the same way you could have over here that to begin with, it wasn't written with those, and then David added those later on. What? It could also be that it was written by Ruach HaKodesh, yeah. But it could also be more Balabatish. You could say that, in fact, it didn't originally have those psukim in it. In fact, this is Ion Yaakov says that David added that part. So that's one opinion. So it was composed, so it was first said at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf. But Chalukin Olav Chaverav, however, Rabbi Yossi continues, Rabbi Lazar's colleagues, the other Tanoim, argue with him, Loima should David Omrei. They argue that David was the first one who composed it. The Nirin Dvarav Midivrehem, however, Rabbi Yossi continues, it's more logical to accept what Rabbi Lazar says over what the other that it was composed already in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, rather than to say that it was composed hundreds of years later by David. Because first of all, Efshe Shochte Yisrael as Pischein V'Notlas Lovein Adjeba David Vlei Omer Shira, so how could you have for hundreds of years, they're Shechting their Korban Pesach, and not saying a shira, and they're taking lulav on Sukkot and not saying a shira, there has to have been some shira that they said, and we're not going to say that originally they said some other shira, and later on it was switched for halal. So we must say then that halal existed already from before. Then Yehoyada actually says that maybe the whole discussion in the Gemara over here is not so much on the entire Hallel, beginning from Halleluka, Hallelu Abdei Hashem. Maybe the first two kapitlach, like we said before, we say them during Magid, according to Basilo, which is the halacha, and those primarily refer to the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. There, sure, it makes sense to say that those were composed originally by Moshe and by the Jewish people at that time. Primarily, we're talking about the rest of it, Loi Lanu, until the end, where the Gemara later on is going to bring different opinions. Who said Loi Lanu? Then that, maybe the Gemara is saying that maybe that was composed also by Moshe, or maybe no, that was composed only later by David. But Rabbi Yossi is saying, still, you have to say the whole Hallel at some point when you're shechting your Korban Pesach, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, and when you're taking your lulav. And how could it be that until then they didn't have that? The Yesh Oimim, or Dover Acher, another point why it makes more sense to say that it was composed in Moshe's times, had a Pisla Shal Micha Oimid Bebechim. Consider, in David's times, Micha's statue is standing in Bechi. Now, what does Bechi mean? So Rashi says it means the name of a place. The Rashbam says it may mean that, but it also may be, it also, the Rashbam prefers an explanation. We know whenever we talk about Getchkas, we always have to talk about them lignai. We always talk about them in a derogatory way. So instead of, like this, we usually try to use nicer language, like we learned at the beginning of the Sefer, and euphemisms, but when it comes to Avodah Zarah, we use Adarab, we use the opposite, we use a dysphemism, a way of making it sound worse. So here, really what it would mean is, and it's standing there and people are worshiping at the Simcha. So therefore, the opposite of Simcha is Bechi, is crying, and therefore we mean that. But in other words, the point is, how would it be possible that there's an Avodah Zarah standing at that time, and Jews are worshiping it, the Yisrael Omrim, all of us are Hallel, and Jews are going to be saying Hallel, which has the posit, K'moyhem Yiyu Oseihem. So Mela, in other words, if it was composed in Moshe's times, then okay, they didn't have Pesel Micha yet, so it was already established to say those psukim, and even later on when Pesel Micha was made, they didn't stop saying it. But if you're going to say that it was first composed in David's times, and then you already have Pesel Micha is standing and people are worshiping it, how are you talking that they would have, that people would have taken that? So here's the verse. So now Marsha points out actually there are different places where Chazal say that Pesel Micha actually was with them at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf already. So in that case, then how does that fit with what we're saying over here? So Marsha says, okay, maybe then it was in secret. Micha already had the idol, but he didn't publicize it. By David's times, it was already publicized. Now, the interesting thing is, in Sefer Shoftim, when it tells the story of Pesel Micha, it says that the statue continued to stand there. First it says, Ad Yoin Glois Ha'aretz, until the day that the land went into Golos. And then the next post it says that it was there, Kol Yemei Ha'yos Veser Lekim B'Shiloi, as long as the Mishkan was in Shiloi. Now, the Mishkan in Shiloh was destroyed a few years before David became king. After that, he had 10 years when Shmuel was leading the people, and 2 or 3 years of Shaul's kingship, and only then did David become king. But Ad Yoin Glois Ha'aretz, what does it mean? So in fact, some of the Mephoshim understand it means when Shiloh was destroyed and the Plishtim captured the Aren, and Jews were forced to leave their hometowns out of fear of the Plishtim invading, then that would be called Ad Yoin Glois Ha'aretz. Now that wouldn't fit with what the Gemara is saying over here, though, that in David's times, Pesel Micha is still standing. So there are Mephoshim who understand Ad Yoin Glois Ha'aretz means literally until the time of the Golos. Maybe the Golos Aseres HaShavatim, maybe even later the Golos of Yehuda and Binyamin at Churban Bayis Rishon. So in that case, the vote would be it still existed in David's times, and the point would be, how would anybody then be first taking on themselves to say Hallel and to be saying Kemoyim Yiyu Oseihem and thereby be cursing themselves? Now the brief points out another possibility that our Gemara may be saying. That's right. For the Rif actually says, maybe the question is, maybe the Gemara is taking the opposite view, not to prove what Rabbi Lazar is saying, that it was already composed by Moshe, but rather to sort of disprove it. To say, in Moshe's times, you already had Pesel Micha, because they had it with them when they crossed the Yamsuf. So how could it be at that time? People are saying, Kemoyim Yoseihem, Mashenkin. If you say David composed it, then fine. By his times, Pesel Micha is gone, according to the opinions that it was gone after Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed, and therefore there's no problem with that. So it might be Fakir. The Gemara is not bringing it as a proof for Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yossi's opinion, but rather to contradict his opinion. So there are different opinions. So in short, there are different opinions when Pesel Micha came to be and when it went out of use. You have a Gemara. I know you have a Gemara that says that it already existed at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, but the Rif is pointing out maybe not necessarily everybody agrees with that. And Fakert, as far as when it was destroyed or when it stopped being used, that you also have different opinions. Was it at the time when Mishkan Shilei was destroyed and the Aron was captured by the Plishtim, or was it hundreds of years later when the Jews actually went into Golos? So that's the thing. You have different opinions. unless you have a time machine, you're not going to find out. You know, I mean, you have different opinions among the Chachamim for how long it was there, based on various Pesukim and various Midrashim. The problem, what does Kamoyim USA mean? It means those who worship idols should be like them. So that would amount to cursing themselves. It would amount to... But the point is, the point the Gemara is asking is like this. It's understood that once Hallel was composed, whenever it was, then all Jews started saying it. So how would all Jews, which includes also the ones who are worshipping Pesel Micha, how would they accept to say that on themselves where they'd be cursing themselves?
Right,
so that's the question. So that's the question. Then Yoda points out, one possibility, he says, is when you get down to it, Pesel Micha did not necessarily start out as an Avodah Zarah per se, as in to represent a power other than Hashem. You have the same there's a similar discussion as far as the Egel Azahav in the desert, and the Egel and the Agolim that Yerovam made. With all of them, there's discussion in various places that maybe they weren't necessarily Avodah Zarah in the sense of that they represent a power other than Hashem, but rather that they're a statue that's meant supposedly in honor of Hashem, or like to be sort of an intermediary between them and Hashem, kind of like Ben Yehoyada compares it to Al Derech. We find Terafim in various places in Tanakh. We find even, for example, that it mentions in Sefer Shmuel that David and Michal had Terafim in their house. Certainly they're not doing it as Avodah Zarah, Chas V'Shalom, but there's a certain thing that people who know these things know how to use them as a way to find out things in Milamayla. So he argues maybe Pesel Micha started out as that. Therefore, there's no problem saying that even if we say that it existed in Moshe's times and they crossed the Yamsuf with it, nevertheless, it's not a problem for them to be saying right afterwards, Kamoyim Yoseim, because Kol Asher B'Teach Behem, because they're not really B'Teach in it, they're not trusting in it. They're just using it right now as a means to find out the supernatural. Later on, when it came to the point where people are actually B'Teach Behem, where they're thinking of it as an independent power of its own, then you would have the problem that how are they saying this Pasuk without cursing themselves? And therefore, that would suggest that Hallel had already been composed by that point. And once the Nusach is there, then people aren't going to go and alter it. What Pesel Micha Bapashtus? It looked like any other statue. I mean,
a person
Bapashtus, yeah. I mean, in the case of Terafim, they look so human-like that you find in that story of David and Michal that Michal used Terafim as a decoy so that meanwhile David escaped. Like we have in Kapitel Nun Tested Tillim, he escaped, and meanwhile she put the Terafim in the bed and covered it with a goat skin to make it look like a person's in the bed, and then only when they bring the whole bed with it to Sheol does he discover that he's been tricked. So yeah, at least in that case, the Terafim were human shaped. So yeah, maybe Pesel Micha was also human shaped. We really don't know. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. We learn in a Braisa. Rav Eliezer Omer Kol Shiras V'Tushbachas Shama David B'Sefer Tehillim. All the songs and praises that David says in throughout Sefer Tehillim, Kenegan Atzmei Amoron. He said them all in connection with events that happened to him. Rabbi Yeshua, Kenegad Sibra Amoron. Rabbi Yeshua says he's saying them regarding Knesset Yisrael. That, for example, he's talking about with Ruach HaKodesh how the Jewish people are going to be suffering terrible troubles and being golos and so forth. The Chum say it's neither one nor the other. It depends. Yesh Mehem Kenegad At. Which Marashal says even according to Rabbi Eliezer, certainly not all of them are Kenegad Atzma. There's no question that some of them are clearly about the Jewish people collectively. And some of them that are clearly about Atzma. The question is the ones that are Stam, the ones that you can't really tell one way or the other. So then you have, so Rabbi Eliezer is saying all of them are connected Atzma, Rabbi Yeshua is saying all of them are connected Sibur, but Chamem and the Chum say, even within that group, Yeshmem connected Atzma, Yeshmem connected Sibur. And it depends. Ha'amu b'loshin yachid connected Atzma, whenever David is talking in the singular, Hatzileini or other such expressions like that. He's talking about his own personal experiences, which is also meant for us Jewish people collectively, because Lev HaMelech Lev Kol Yisrael, but originally it was based on his own personal experiences. V'amuris, B'loshen Ram, connected to the Tzibur, the ones that are written B'loshen Ram are to begin with B'ruach HaKodesh about what's going to happen to the Tzibur. More details about how we distinguish between one capital and another. Nitzuach b'nigun la'osid lovi. Whenever we have a capital that begins with nitzuach, like namnatzeach, or where it begins with nigun, like vinginos, it means la'osid lovi. It means it's talking about something in the future. Now, why should that mean the future? Rashbam says, I don't know why it means that, but that's how they have the Kabbalah that it means that. Marsha explains nitzuach, at least we can understand, because we learned in Erev, and whenever it says the expression netzach, usela, or voed, it means forever. So therefore, a capital that begins lamnatzeach doesn't just mean by the conductor, or however you translate lamnatzeach, it also means for forever. So therefore, it's lost in love. Nigun Marsha doesn't explain either. Ben Yoyada says, we know that nowadays we have Pino Shoshiva Nimin, we have the harp or the violin with seven strings, seven musical notes. La'asid Lover, there's going to be eight, and then later on ten. So in that sense, Nigun also, the Ginos, refers to a higher level of song than we have now. When you have Maskil, when you have a capital that begins with the David Maskil, or Maskil La'asif, or whatever, means Al Yedei Turgamon, means it was explained through a Turgamon. He would say it, as usual, when you have a Turgamon throughout Shas, where a Rosh Hashiva would be giving a drasha, and he would say his point quietly, and then the Turgamon would say it out loud and explain it for everybody. A Maskil is the same thing like that, but David would compose the Nigun, whoever it was, compose the Nigun, and told it to a Turgamon, and the Turgamon explained it to the public. Another difference, L'David Mizmer, when we have a capital that begins first with the word L'David and then Mizmer, Melamed Sheshorsa Olav Shechina V'Achakach Omer Shira. There you have that first the Shechina rested on him. So first L'David, first is what David is fully going to be, a Baal Ruach HaKodesh, and then Mizmer, and then the result of that he was able to compose this Nigun. Mizmer the David, but if it's the other way around, Mizmer and then L'David, meaning because of the Mizmer, therefore L'David, Melamed, L'David, also the point is, it means true David, meaning that the Shechina, that the Ruach HaKodesh, came true David. So when it says Mizmer L'David, Melamed, Sh'omer Shira, V'achatach Shorsa Olav Shechina. First he said the Shira, and then as a result of that, of the Simcha that he got from that, the Shechina rested on him. L'lamdcha, and that comes to teach you, the Shechina does not rest on a person from a state of laziness, or sense of sadness, or from laughter, or from being lightheaded and silly, or from empty talk, but rather only when a person was occupied with Simcha Shal Mitzvah, then the Shechina can rest on him. This is you have also in Brachas. The Gemara brings this that therefore we're inonymly spell elamitach kovid rosh, and the kovid rosh also includes you have to have simcha shal mitzvah, and that's the appropriate frame of mind to go into daven and to learn. And he so it means exactly that the simcha that a person has involved in doing a mitzvah. Like this, David is doing a mitzvah praising Hashem, which is part of the mitzvah of tefillah. So therefore, he's doing that mitzvah, and from that comes the Ruach HaKodesh, L'David, where now he's able to speak with Ruach HaKodesh and not yet. Yeah. I don't know if it necessarily means dancing, but it means that a person should feel simcha in his heart that he's doing the mitzvah. Yeah, doing that tzedakah, any mitzvah can do. As famously, the Rabbeim said that even tshuva can be done with simcha. Interesting point worth mentioning in this connection of Shamshon Rafael Hirsch has a very interesting take on it. Bechlal, he explains in many places in his Perushim, we know how there are different, you have the Hei Motzoi Sapeh, you have the five different places in the mouth from which you, or in the throat, and whatever, from which you articulate sounds, like Aleph Hei Ches Ayin are all Usius Grunius from the throat, and Beis Vav Mem Fei are all from the lips, etc. So he, in his Perushim, he regularly shows how a word that has one of those letters will interchange with another letter of the same group. So in particular, he explains in this connection, the word samach is the same. So the shoresh samach is related to the word samach, as in to grow. What's a real simcha when you're growing from it? Anyway. So shenemar, we find a pasuk. where Elisha had gotten upset. We learned earlier in the Masechta that the kings of Yehuda and Yisrael and the governor of Edom came to see him to ask for help, where they're going to war and they're running out of water. And at first he tells Yehoram, the king of Yisrael, who needs you? You're an Oved Avodah Zarah. You want to ask for the future. Go ask the Nevi'a Habal. And then they get him to agree to tell them Nevuah. So he says, "Va'ata kuli menagin, now bring to me a singer. V'hoyak nagin amenagin, as the singer is singing his nigun. Vati olav yad Hashem, then the hand of Hashem was on him." So earlier in the Masechta, we talked about the point is that therefore, because Elisha got angry, therefore the Shechina temporarily left him, and therefore he needed the musician to help him get back in a good mood. But here we're saying Bechlal, that he needs to be in a good mood, even if it hadn't been for the anger beforehand, he needed to be in a good mood in order for the Shechina to rest on him, and the Vahoyah Kenagin helped put him into that frame of mood of Simcha Shal Mitzvah. The same is true when you're going to learn a matter of halacha. If you, in order to be able to learn and absorb it properly, you need to be in a state of simcha shal mitzvah. You can't be, for example, schoik or kalus roish or atzvos or any of the other things, and then be able to turn and start learning halacha and be able to understand it. The same thing as far as a good dream. If you want to have good dreams at night, make sure you go to bed in a frame of mind of simcha shal mitzvah. So the Gemara asks, this that was saying with Dvar Halacha, you need to be in a state of mind of Simcha Shal Mitzvah, Eini, is that really so? If any Talmud Chacham was sitting in front of his Rebbe, the Ein Sif Sois of Notfos Mar, and his lips are not dripping with bitterness, in other words, Fakert, you shouldn't be in a happy mood, you should be in a serious and almost fearful mood. Such a person, Tikavena, his lips deserve to be burnt. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says in Shir Hashirim, Sifsos of Sheshanim, his lips are like roses, Notfos Myrrh over, they're dripping with flowing myrrh. Musk is a type of spice. So first of all, Altikri Sheshanim Elo Sheshonim, don't read Sheshanim, which means roses, but rather Sheshonim, those who learn Torah. So Sifsos of Sheshonim, the lips of those who are learning Torah, Valtikri Myrrh over, Elamar over, don't read Myrrh over, flowing myrrh, but rather mar over, there has to be bitterness dripping from them. So therefore, Sefakert, you see that Talmud Chacham, when he's sitting and learning Torah from his Rebbe, has to be in a state of aim of a yira, not a sense of simcha. So, in fact, we have this Gemara in Brachos as well. Marsha over here refers to what he says there, that, So what is he saying over there? Here we go. I can't find it right now. But the point is you have to have simcha, of course, but when you're learning Torah, the more important thing is shoshonim, the more important thing is that you have to have moreover, you have to have this dripping bitterness rather than feeling a sense of simcha at the time. So the more answers, loy kasha haba rabba haba talmidah. There's no contradiction. One's talking about the Rebbe, one's talking about the Talmud. The Talmud has to have a sense of aim of a yira. The Rebbe can have a sense of simcha shal mitzvah because he doesn't have to have a yira for his talmidim, but the talmidim have to have murder rabba for murder shamayim. So therefore, they have to be in a serious mood and not be in a sense of simcha, which can easily spill over into kalos. Another answer, Hobba Rabba, both of them can be talking about the Rebbe. But like Kasha, Hobba Nifta. Even the Rebbe himself, there's a difference between before he starts teaching and afterwards. When Rabba was going to start teaching his Talmidim, first he would say something humorous and the Talmidim would laugh. Afterwards, they would sit with Ema, and he would start teaching, because at that point, then you have to have the mar over, whereas beforehand, you can have the simcha shal mitzvah, and then from that, afterwards, you come to the mar over. So we have in the wedding mimer where it talks about the idea that you have this chitzoniistic connection, and that makes it possible now to have a pnimiistic connection. That's what's accomplished by the milsa debdichasa. What we're saying also, what it accomplishes is that now both of them have a sense of simcha shel mitzvah, and then from that they come to the merirus and to the seriousness that they have in order to learn Torah be'emo v'yuda b'resus v'ziyuk. I may have mentioned before, actually, you know, when we think about it, what are these milsa debdichas that Rabbah is telling them? I mean, you know, is he telling them knock knock jokes or something? You know, I've thought what it might be. We find sometimes in the Gemara where an Amora will say something and then says machaku alei b'marava. They laughed about it in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, or achichu alei, or other such expressions. Meaning, b'chlal, what is a joke? So a joke is when you have a joke is basically, they say, is that when your expectations are subverted, you expected a certain thing and instead something else completely out of left field. So it can be a pun, for example, it can be whatever kinds of jokes where you weren't expecting it and then all of a sudden you have that. Now, when your mitzvus, for example, is there's the world around you, then things in the world around you are the stuff of jokes. You expect something to be in a certain way in the world, and it's not, and therefore you laugh. When your mitzvus is Torah, as Amiroyim were, then when you hear something that doesn't make sense, that doesn't fit with what you expect there to be in Torah, then you find it funny. So that might be the kind of jokes that Rabbah is telling the Talmidim, things like that in Torah that don't fit, that don't fit with what they already know of Torah, and therefore it's something to laugh at, that the mitzvah, it's different than the mitzvahs that they're expecting. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Hallel zeh mi omre. Getting back to the question of who said this hallel. Who was the first one to say the hallel that we say on Yom Tov? And again, Ben Yehoyada says, primarily the question is mostly on the second half of Hallel, beginning with Loi Lonu. The first two kapitlach, it's fairly obvious, were composed at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But after that, Rabbi Eliezer, Moshe v'Yisrael, Amru v'Shal, Sham du'al Yam. So Rabbi Eliezer says, like we said before, that Moshe and the Jewish people composed it when they were standing by the Yamsuf, before they even crossed it. Heim omru loy lanu Hashem b'gomer. So they're saying Hashem, don't do it for our sake. Loy lanu Hashem loy lanu till the shimcha tein kovod. Meshiva ruach hakodesh v'omer lahem. And sure enough, Hashem's answered them with a pasuk from Yeshaya. Lamani esek ki eich yechal b'gomer. Hashem says, for my sake, I will do it because how can I allow a chilul Hashem of my name? So in other words, we say in Hallel, loy lanu, Hashem, loy lanu, and Hashem answers with a double expression, you're right, it's loy lanu, it's not for your sake, but we say, ki l'shim chatein kovet, and Hashem says, you're right, I will do it, and Hashem repeats, l'mani, l'mani, I will do it for my sake, so that there shouldn't be a chilul Hashem. Marsha points out over here that particularly we know that we know that by Kriyas Yamsuf you have there's a Midas Hadin that Hashem is judging and the Malachim and the Malachi arguing that Halolu Oiv David Zara Halolu Oiv David Zara, and they both worshiping Avodah Zarah. Why do the Jewish people deserve to be saved? So we're saying Taka, we don't have the schus to be saved, but do it for your sake, because otherwise it will be a chilul Hashem. So that's how they composed it. Rabbi Yeshua, Yehuda, Amir Yeshua, Yisrael Amru, B'shasha Amru Aleim Malchut Knan. So Rabbi Yeshua, or Rabbi Yehuda says that it was later when Yeshua and the Jewish people were standing up against the kings, when the kings of Canaan rose up against them to try to fight against them. Hey, Mom, Loi Lanu Umashivachol, the same thing they're saying, Loi Lanu Hashem, Loi Lanu. We may not have the schusin to defeat them, but do it for your sake. And Hashem says, I will. Now, with this and the next few opinions, Rashi explains, it's not that each one is arguing with the other one. It's each one is adding to the previous one. Rabbi Eliezer is saying they said it at the time before Kriyas Yamsuf. Rabbi Yeshua or Rabbi Yehuda is adding they also said it at the time of the wars against the Malchut Knan, and the next one is going to be that they also said it when they're going to fight against Sisera, and so on and so forth. On the other hand, the Rashbam does not like that explanation. Because after all, we said before, and we're going to quote over here, the opinion that Nevi'im Shebeneim Teknu, that the Nevi'im made the Takana, that they should say it every time that they're saved from Atzara. Well, in that case, then what's the difference between that and the previous opinions? Rather, Rashbam says, no, each one of them is saying that it was first composed at this point. Rabbi Eliezer is saying it was first composed before Kriyas Yamsu. Rabbi Yeshua or Rabbi Yehuda is saying it was first composed when Yeshua fought and then the Jews fought against Malchut Knan and so forth. Which Marashah wonders in that case. It's fine. Yeshua comes before David. But first of all, though, the question is, we know the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra that David composed Sefer Tehillim using the contributions of 10 earlier Zkenim. You have Moshe, you have Odom Arishin, you have the three Bnei Korach, Haman, Yedusun, and so forth, and Yeshua is nowhere on that list. Neither is Devarah, the next one in our Gemara. So why aren't they listed? And on top of that, Marashah says, if you're going to say, we're going to have further on, we're going to have an opinion that it was Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, or Chizkiah, or Mordechai and Esther, they lived long after David HaMelech. So then how is there, according to the Rashbam's understanding, that it means that they first composed this pasuk and the rest of Hallel, then how does it get into Sefer Tehillim, which is David's composition? So Marashah says it seems better to follow Rashi's explanation that it means that each of these Tanoim is not disagreeing with the previous one, but saying it was also said at this time. So fine, it was first said by Moshe and the Jewish people before Kriyas Yamsuf. Fine, Moshe is one of those Asaras Kenim. With that said, though, there is an interesting point. The Malbin makes a point in his Akdama to Tehillim, in his Akdama to his Pirush on Tehillim, and in a few places in his Pirush, he learns that actually, no, there are kapitlach, he says, that were composed long after David. We say that David wrote Sefer Tehillim, but he says as long as there was still Nevuah among the Jewish people, then they were still entitled to add to Sefer Tehillim. And he identifies various kapitlach that he says were composed at later times. So according to him, then the Marashah's question is not such a question, because even the last one that we're going to mention over here, Mordechai and Esther, are still living in the time when there's Nevuah, and therefore they would be actually entitled to compose Psukim and Prokim of Tehillim. Okay, the Gemara continues. Rabbi Lozit, Rabbi Eliezer HaMudoyim, Devoda Ubarak, Amruhu B'Shosh, Amr Alem Sisra B'Yavim. When Sisra and Yavin and their army are attacking the Jewish people, and we're going to learn in a couple of blasts, Be'ez Hashem, more details about that battle, then, so Devoda and Barak said this tefillah to Hashem. Hey, Omer Loilanu Hashem Loilanu, Meshiva Ruach HaKodesh, Omer Lahem Lamani Lamani, Esa, Kiei Kiei Chavagayim. Again, they're saying, we may not have the schusim, but Hashem, you do it for your sake, and Hashem says, I will. Rav Lozib and Azariah, or Rav Akiva, or Mechanani, Shov Azariah, Omru, B'Shosh, Omer Aleim, Nebuchadnezzar, HaRosha. When Nebuchadnezzar rose up against Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah and threatened them, if you don't bow down to my statue, I'm throwing you into the furnace. So they also, they said this pasuk, and Hashem replied that I'll do it for my sake. Rav Akiva, or Rav Elazar ben Azariah, when Sancheirah was attacking the Jews and threatening to conquer them, then Chizkiyahu davened this, Heim Omer Loilanu, Mishiva Cholo. Rav Yosef Guliyam and Mordechai Esther Amruhu B'Shasha Amaleim Hamanarasha Heim Amru Loilanu Meshiva Chola. Same thing. They're saying that Hashem save us for your sake, and Hashem says I will. So again, according to Rashi, we don't mean that these Tanoim are arguing when it was first composed. They were saying it was first composed when they're standing by the Yam Suf, when they're threatened by Paro's army behind them and the sea in front of them, and Hashem responded, I will save you for my sake. And then later on, in future generations, each time that they're faced with a tremendous danger, then they said the same thing, and Hashem replied the same way. So may, should we now be saying Loilanu because of the situation now? I don't know. I mean, maybe. I guess, yeah. But again, according to the Rashbam, the question is, when was it first composed? Which event in Jewish history first led to the composition of this pasuk? Yeah. It's true. On the other hand, you should know. I mean, the fact is, there is a Gemara elsewhere that says that if a person says Halal b'choyim harei z'machara from a gadif, because it's not appropriate to say Halal every day. So maybe to say this individual pasuk, maybe, but to say the whole Halal every day during the current situation, I don't know. I don't know. What? Maybe just the pasuk Lelanu. Yeah, I don't know. The Chum say, here's how it was composed, like we learned before, Nevi'im Shebeneim Tiknu Lahem Yisrael, the Nevi'im who lived among the Jewish people, they made a takana, that they should say Halal every time and every situation and in every tzara that shouldn't come on them, meaning we hope that it doesn't come, but if it does, when they're saved from it, then we say Halal to thank Hashem for saving us, and that's why, for example, we say it on Hanukkah, and that's why we say it on Hanukkah. And again, like we talked about yesterday, in principle, we should say it on Purim as well, but the Gemara in Megillah discusses a few reasons why we don't, and therefore we don't. The Hallel, the Megillah stands in place of Hallel, or Akati Abdi Dachashver Shannan, and therefore it's not appropriate to say Hallel to Abdi Hashem, but in general, you have the idea that when there's a Tzara that the Jewish people are saved from, then they say Hallel. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogo'ola. What is today? Gimel Cheshvan. So now we're at the end of the period before Yemosa Mashiach, and there's no question, there's not even the slightest shadow of a doubt that the time of the Geula is already here, as Chazal say, Kolu Kol Hakitzin. And that means that the avodah that we do after that, that as long as Mashiach is delayed for whatever reason, which is impossible to understand why it should be, at this point it's not avodah sabirurim, because at this point the avodah sabirurim is done. It's a different kind of avodah. This, by the way, the Rebbe is saying kolu kol akitzi. I've thought sometimes it may mean also poshut in the literal sense. You find in many different svarim, you find kitzim that have been suggested for different years. I'm not aware of any, now we're in Tufshin Pei Dalet, I'm not aware of any, aside for the year 6000, that have been mentioned after our time. There's no sefer that I know of that says there's a ketz for Tufshin, Sadik something, or Tuf Tuf, or whatever. So it literally is kolu kol akitzi in that sense. All right, continuing with halachas of Shabbos, we're talking about the dinim of under what circumstances are you allowed to have a goy do work for you on Shabbos. So the first thing we said yesterday is the goy has to take it out of your house before Shabbos. The second condition is that you have to arrange with the goy that you're going to pay him. Now, the Alter Rebbe says it doesn't necessarily mean that you actually fix the actual amount you're going to pay him, just that you're telling him you're going to be paying. So then that's good enough, because then the point is he's doing the malacha fundamentally for himself because he wants to get paid. So, for example, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch continues, suppose, for example, you have a goyish maid, or a goyish worker or a maid or whatever who you've hired for a period of time, then they can't do malacha for you on Shabbos, because then they're only doing it for your ta'elus, because you're not specifically paying them for that job, you're just paying them on a regular basis. In other words, you're not paying them specifically for that job. So cleaning ladies, maybe, yeah, because you pay them by the hour, so therefore that's fine. However many hours they're working for you, they're getting paid, and it's prearranged. So therefore, in a sense, they're doing it for themselves, yeah. However, though, you do have the first consideration that they're doing it in your house, so there is that other consideration. Well, the cleaning lady is cleaning in your house, right? So therefore you have the problem that malacha is being done in your... Now here he's talking about where, for example, let's say you're having a goy make something for you. So you can't have him do that in your house on Shabbos, even if you prearrange the payment. A cleaning lady is something else. I mean, there's not necessarily malacha involved. Sometimes you have a din, by the way, you have, I think we're going to get into it further on, that you can have something which the goy may well do it in a way that involves Chilul Shabbos, but they don't necessarily have to. Meaning there's a way that they could conceivably do the same thing without being Chilul Shabbos, without there being a malacha of Shabbos involved, and in that case you have a little more leeway in it if they choose to do it the way that's easier for them. So there is that consideration also. Anyway, he goes on to say, for example, also, if a goy is traveling someplace and you give him a letter or to take along, like nowadays, like you have courier services or whatever, and he's going to be transporting it on Shabbos, then you have to pay him. So that way, again, he's doing it b'shvil atzmo. So practically speaking, for example, let's say you send something by mail or by FedEx or whatever. So you're, to begin with, you're paying a certain amount and the goy is getting his pay out of that. So therefore that would be an example of kotzatz. But let's say, for example, sometimes you have these courier services where you make a one-off thing that he's going to transport something for you. So then you'd have to make sure also that you prearrange with him before Shabbos that you're going to pay him, or according to Kitzur Shulchan Aruch himself, not only that you're going to pay him, but how much you're going to pay him, and then it's considered that he's doing the shvil atzmai, as opposed to, in other words, apparently the idea is if you have this guy doing this kind of work regularly for you on weekdays, and now you're going to have him do one on Shabbos as well, that would be a problem, because then he's not doing it with tzarech atzmai, then he's doing it for you tzarech. Okay, in practice, I mean, how this shakes out in practice is something to ask a rav if these kinds of things come up, but in future sifim, we'll talk about the other criteria. Rav Chanan ben Akasha.